Welcome back to the Buffalo Bread Podcast. We are in preseason week 3. This is our post-game analysis for the Buffalo Bills and Carolina Panthers, who played an offensive slugfest that the Bills sadly lost. But none of the Bills' starters played in the game. You know, take that for what it's worth. Dan, where is your head at? We've got 2 weeks to go till the season starts.
I would like for it to be 2 weeks from now is where my head is at. But I'm glad that we have seen the Bills play their full preseason slate at this point. Listen, preseason, there is not much to take away from it with regard to quality of starters, because let's be real, starters aren't going to play a lot in the preseason. Even this year with the Bills on both the offensive and defensive side of the ball, switching so many different players into the starting rotation, we weren't going to see a lot. No one's putting a lot on film in the preseason. But what I took away from this preseason, I think more than anything else, was I had a vested interest, JJ, in the young guys. And it's not just our draft picks. It's the Joe Andreessens, the Frank Gore Juniors, like some of these young UDFAs that the Bills brought in, really seeing for me, I think, in a new light, how they plan on developing their youth pipeline and their talent pipeline as the Josh Allen contract becomes a bigger and bigger cap hit every single season. We're so used to our high floor veteran laden rosters for Buffalo that honestly, the 53-man really wasn't much of a competition for some of these young guys. This season, I found it really refreshing, at times concerning, given the variance of play, but ultimately really cool to see some of these young guys stand out and show out on a game-to-game basis.
Yeah, I agree. I think that the biggest thing, this is the real measure of whether or not a year-over-year contender status, which is something that Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott both touted when they entered the Bills in 2017, is we're about building a team that's going to be in the hunt every single year for a championship. That requires evolution. That requires a team to really establish draft and develop and re-sign as a mantra, and making sure that they keep talented players, that they develop players beyond their draft status. As you mentioned with UDFAs, they really have to get those players to play outside and above their kind of weight class in terms of the investment of resources, whether that's draft pick or free agency dollars. Really, that's the measure of whether or not they're able to build this as a year-over-year contender, is can they get more for less of an investment every year? And so far, I'm also pleased with that. I think that in particular, some of the defensive pieces and the money ball approach to wide receiver both seem promising to me. I have some concerns I'm sure we'll talk about and get into in terms of certain position groups. But all in all, I think that it's a good time to be a Bills fan anytime Josh Allen is slinging it. And it's more interesting, I think, this year than in probably two or three of the past years, because it's not the Bills just dusting it off and going for it again because they got knocked down by the Chiefs or the Bengals in the playoffs. It is literally, we're rebranding, rebuilding, regrowing this team from the core out. And I'm very interested to see how that looks on field once week one comes.
Yeah, absolutely, dude. So let's talk about the game in and of itself. As you mentioned, many of the starters did not play, which was expected in the third and final preseason game here. And because of some of the, I would call it annoying injuries that the Bills have faced this preseason, amongst some of the starting unit, particularly in the wide receiver room. The defense, I don't know how much we should be concerned, but they did not look great. And I think coming at it from that standpoint, as we dive a little bit into who we want to see on this roster, one of the things that stands out is because as we led in with this pod, there are so many young guys competing for spots. There is not a lot of proven depth, particularly on the defensive side of the ball this season. And I think the Bills are going to find themselves in a really interesting space because this is a team that is used to playing a lot of close games, as we'll get into probably later on in the pod. And I think the defense has been a big reason why so many of their games have been so close in the regular season. We know the scheme is going to be solid. Like, McDermott is going to scheme up something with Babich that is going to work for this unit. This is the first time, though, I've really looked at a Bills depth chart and been like, I have concerns about some of the guys on the defensive side of the ball and their ability to execute. Now, listen, McDermott and Babich, they're both great coaches. It's harder for me to see it coming together, especially after that Panthers game, where granted, Bryce Young played and the Panthers' first unit played for a little bit, against our backups, but Panthers are not a good football team. They're just not, that first unit is not a good football team. I have concerns, particularly in the linebacker room. So yeah, man, but the run game looked great. And the second unit O-line and Aaron Cromer, we trust. I rescind everything that I said earlier in the preseason about where that offensive line is at, but real concerns on the defensive side of the ball. So where do you want to start, offense or defense?
Let's start with the defense. I think that's the, as you've, you know, aptly pointed out, the side of the ball that has had the most change. And it's weird to say that given that the offense with Diggs and Davis departing, there's almost nobody with targets from Josh Allen other than Khalil Shakir on that side. But I really think that the defense has gone through a whole metamorphosis in the offseason. I am not as worried about the defense because I actually think one unit is substantially better this year than last. And again, assuming everybody, the top four stay healthy, and that's defensive tackle. I think that Ed Oliver is like absolutely going to be on fire this season. And he, in his limited snaps in preseason, looked excellent. Bet like he's picking up right where he left off, might even have taken another step. And he is, you know, it's tough to see good play at that position, but ask any analysts or anybody who looks at like metrics and breaks down the play-by-play, and they'll tell you that he's one of the best defensive tackles in the entire league. And I think that he looks a little bit even sharper this year. And if you pair him together with DaQuan Jones, the Joe Andreessen coming out party against Pittsburgh was largely because he was playing behind the first unit defensive tackles. And they were gobbling up double teams. They were not allowing guards or centers to scrape to the second level. And so he faded in the Panthers, but I think that was largely because of the backup defensive tackle play. And they were actually down the roster a little bit. It wasn't just that they weren't playing the top two, it was they weren't playing the top three for most of that game. And so there were a lot of people. Gable Steveson was getting a lot of snaps, and that player has no business on any football field, considering he just started the sport this summer. So give him a chance to get it under his belt for a bit. And he's definitely not going to be counted on by linebackers to keep them clean. And so that's the unit I'm very bullish on, is the defensive tackle unit. I think that rotation is better than the Bills have seen in 3 years. I think that Jordan Phillips was just a not player. He was juice when he was here, but he left for Arizona. And when he came back, I think he was a shell. He was barely impactful on any snaps. And so I think they've definitely upgraded there. I think that Greg Rousseau, after completely eating the right tackle for the Steelers lunch on multiple snaps, he was in the game for 8 snaps and he had 5 pressures and 2 sacks. So I'm pretty happy about that. And I can see, and that was a first round pick, highly touted, whose name I can't remember.
Yes, that's right.
And he was from Georgia and was drafted in 2023. So Broderick Jones just looked like a complete, he looked like a third stringer against Greg Rousseau. And I thought that there were some things I saw Greg Rousseau pull off that I haven't seen from his game in terms of like speed to power, one arm jab, the dip under, like he had a better repertoire of moves. And I listened to some media availability with him where he was asked, do you go in with a plan? How do you feel like you have more moves? And he basically was like, you don't really have more moves as a defensive lineman. You just figure out the 2 or 3 that you're excellent at and then counters off of each of them. And that's what you have. You can look at somebody like Von Miller, who's one of the best pass rushers in the history of the NFL, and he doesn't have more than 3 or 4 moves that he uses. He's just better at them than anyone else.
Right.
And I thought that was an astute point, and that tells me it's come fully together for Rousseau. I think being healthy is going to be the biggest question.
Always with him. Yes. Always with him.
Especially, always with like foot injuries.
Yes. The lower body calves. Stuff on those bigger guys is always a concern. Always a concern for sustainability at the position. No, I agree with you on the DT end, though. I'm curious, what do you think of Carter at this point? This is a criticism you could probably make of a lot of rookies on a lot of teams. In college, I saw the processing speed, the pass run recognition was really quick on film. At the NFL level, at least in preseason, he's having a much harder time with that. I think he makes the roster. There's no reason why he shouldn't. But does he give you pause at this point? Because he's a third round pick. They're not gonna not roster him, and he's gonna play in the rotation. So, do you have any concerns about Carter as a depth piece on that line?
Yeah, and especially because I think they're going to probably go heavy at defensive end. They're probably going to only keep the core four, DaQuan Jones, Ed Oliver, Austin Johnson, and Dwayne Carter, because of his draft status. I am worried about him when he is in the game. I think that we saw some flashes from him in some of his snaps in the preseason in terms of his kind of burst and ability to press and rush the passer. I was really worried about him in some run stops and run fits. So we'll see. I think he's got the thing about Dwayne Carter is he is probably a slightly lesser profile physically than you'd want for the NFL, but he's got so much ability and vision for it, like you mentioned in his college tape, that I think it's a matter of the game slowing down for him and him getting more comfortable with the speed of the game, the size of the players, the strength of everybody across from him. And I think that might just take some time. I'm not at all worried about him and its long-term prospects, because I think that what they drafted for was an incredibly high character guy who has enough physical ability to be good at it, but he's really more a penetration style three technique. He's not going to, if he has to spell DaQuan Jones, it's not going to go well. I think I'd rather actually see, of course, I'd rather see Austin Johnson because he's more of that body type. But I would even rather see Ilyanku or Deshaun Williams be elevated for a game if they're on the practice squad to spell DaQuan Jones if there was an issue there than have Dwayne Carter play any snaps trying to hold the point of attack at a one.
Yeah, and that's that in and of itself. You mentioned DaQuan Jones. We are hoping for a full season out of the guy that I don't know that we're necessarily going to get. So Austin Johnson becomes very important, not just as a rotational piece, but there could be two or three games where we're relying on him to start. And then you really do need Carter to play that kind of swing from the one to the three if necessary, depending on what kind of depth you got on the practice unit. I like your take on edge, and I think they need to throw as many irons in that fire as humanly possible. Because outside of Greg Rousseau, who looks like he's poised to take a leap, I've not loved what I've seen out of AJ Epineza this preseason. The pass rush ability looks like it is where it was towards the tail end of last season. Dude, his run stopping ability, though, looks like it's taken a full step back. And when you're playing opposite of Greg Rousseau, who I think it's not an overstatement to say is probably a top 10, maybe even a top 7 edge defender against the run, it's going to be open season on AJ Epineza for opposing teams' run games. And it leaves a big hole to me on this defensive line if he can't figure out that aspect to his game and become a little bit more well-rounded there. And it's not something, quite frankly, that showed up on his film last season, though, because he was in such a limited rotational spot, they were only putting him in a lot of pure pass rush situations. If they are not getting out of Von Miller what they need and Von Miller becomes your situational guy, I have real concerns about AJ Epineza getting a majority of the snaps opposite Rousseau. Where are you at with that?
I have the same concerns because I observed, of course, the same thing of AJ Epineza just not holding at the point of attack. And that's been a problem for his game since he came into the league, was that he gets swallowed up or washed out a lot. And I think that some of it was the variability of his body type because he was gaining weight and losing weight and finding his flow. Now he's been at the proper weight for 2 years now and that he's going to play at, and he seems to get washed out, get swallowed up, get easily moved off the spot with doubles, not holding the point of attack. I think the only saving grace for AJ Epineza is that Christian Benford and Rasul Douglas are both excellent tackling corners, and so he will likely have somebody on the outside behind him that can come up and minimize the damage. And that has been the case for a while. I think that also would apply to Christian Benford and Dorian Williams. I think Dorian Williams especially is exceptional at playing forward and fitting the run. And it's a matter of if AJ Epineza is not doing so poorly that he's throwing up all over himself, I think he'll probably keep that position starting across from Rousseau and leaving Von Miller for situational pass rush situations. Dwayne Smoot, I think, is an excellent edge defender and may start eating into AJ Epineza's snaps as the every down, early down run defender if he starts to be a liability.
Yeah, JJ, I think Smoot is going to factor into the defensive tackle rotation too. He's got some of that inside-outside versatility that the Bills typically covet in their line. But also, I think, too, depending on the health of that room, they may need him to do that. I don't know. They invested in Epineza, hoping that they were going to catch him in his prime. And again, preseason is what it is. This guy's kicking off rust, but I just haven't seen it. Another interesting tidbit, I think, on the defensive side of the ball from the Panthers game you mentioned, everybody's favorite son of Buffalo, Joe Adrizan, who did not show well in this game. But again, a lot of it was probably the talent around him, as you mentioned, wasn't playing with the first unit defensive line. We have seen how much quality of defensive line play in this Buffalo scheme makes a difference for those linebackers. I think it is nothing to me that would keep him from making the 53-man roster, especially because the state of the linebacker room is what it is at this point. But yeah, another area that I want to talk about, and this is has to be one of my favorite preseason stories, I think, so far out of Bills camp, Daquan Hardy, dude. That guy. Not only did he show great and improved decision-making to me in the return game, which ups his value as a special teamer, I cannot get enough of this dude's aggression and attitude in decision-making when he is out there. They have played him as much on the outside, I think, as anything else. Like, he was billed out of the draft as someone who could potentially back up Taron Johnson. And maybe, because we know Taron Johnson's eventually going to age out of the nickel position and the nickel corner position. And you have said there is probably a 2 to 3 year window where they will transition him to safety. And I totally agree. So Hardy looks an early insurance policy against injury or that inevitable transition. But this dude can play on the outside too. And his play, should he sustain it heading into the regular season, really changes my outlook on the cornerback room and depth on the outside as a whole. Because if they can use him in varying positions as a chess piece in the secondary, dude, if they can find the right situations, pure passing situations, and let his innate instincts and decision-making and aggression towards the ball, he literally feels like a dude that McDermott, depending on the situation, can go to and say, we need a turnover, go get it. And he feels like a dude who's going to get it. And I thought he played a great game, both special teams and defensively, against the Panthers. And to me, this is a dude I want on the 53-man.
He reminds me a little bit, not in kind of stature, but a little bit of kind of that Dane Jackson of a player who...
Oh, why are you doing this to him?
I know.
Why?
I'm doing this to him because we've seen him like show out and show up against second and third string passing attacks.
I get it.
And I know that what you're saying, and I'm excited about him too. I don't mean to like just throw water on the hot coals, but I think he is a player who there is a reason that he fell as far as he did in the draft. He has some limitations, but he could all... I think his floor is Dane Jackson. His ceiling is Taron Johnson. And you want that ceiling. He's an all pro, right? And so I think there's a possibility there. I'm trying not to get too dang excited because I tend to get overly... Like, I was like, all right, Joe Andreessen, new Matt Milano. Let's go. But yeah, no, I love the Daquan Hardy story because especially he is not the body type that you can play outside corner in the NFL, but his tenacity forced their hand and they're like, okay, get out there, Daquan, let's see you. And right now he's on the depth chart as like he's in the top six corners. He's acting as the understudy for Christian Benford. So not a bad place to be for him. And I think too, I think that he's pretty much a lock because of the punt return ability.
Oh, yeah. And the improvement over the three preseason games in his decision-making ability, I think he let a punt go at the 5-yard line against the Panthers. And that was a really big improvement because of the Steelers. I think he caught it.
Caught something inside his own 5.
Yeah. So the decision-making has improved. Dude, the tenacity. He reminds me, do you remember Courtland Finnegan, former Tennessee Titan? Who just got under everybody's skin.
Yeah,
teammates loved to play with him, but opposing teams hated to play against him because he played with so much ego and hubris and physicality. That's who Hardy reminds me of,
nice.
Dude.
And that's a good comp.
Thank you. I feel like it is a good comp. But also, too, it shows to me, not necessarily a change in scheme, but the Bills' understanding by bringing in a guy like Rasul Douglas, who is a turnover machine in and of himself. A guy like Kair Elam, who is as likely to get you a 15-yard defensive holding penalty or an INT, and then a guy like Hardy, they are trying to prioritize not just keeping the lid on opposing offenses, but turning them over and giving Josh Allen and this offense more opportunities to go to work. I like the aggression in the secondary that I'm seeing, dude. I really like it. And I hope it leads to the thing that we have said the Bills need to do more if they want to be compete with some of these quick passing offenses, and that's play more man. And I feel great about the depth in the secondary that they can do that with some success this year.
Yeah, and I think that for me, I don't have any other comments on the defense other than I don't have – it's almost like the linebacker situation last offseason in preseason. I don't have a lot to say about the safeties this preseason because – we know that Taylor Rapp is going to hold the starting spot. He played barely any of the preseason games because of the injury situation out there. They did not want one of their expected starters to go down like they have with all of their other expected starters. And so the question really becomes who's going to be lined up with him. It's most likely DeMar Hamlin to start the season, but I can see Cam Lewis, Cole Bishop, or Mike Edwards pretty quickly replacing DeMar Hamlin. Because we know about Hamlin's limitations. You love the aggression. You love the way he comes up and fills on run fits. But he sometimes is a liability in coverage, especially with speedier receivers.
Yeah, I could see, you know, it'll be interesting to see who they roll out in the Arizona game. You could see Hamlin getting the start, but Mike Edwards, who finally was able to get off the injured list, graded out pretty well against the Panthers. PFF, again, take it with a grain of salt. But they graded him as a 79, one of the top five Bills performers in that game in the preseason. I see a world where Hamlin gets the start, but if Marvin Harrison Jr. absolutely blows by him on a go route, I can see Edwards in there pretty quickly.
Yeah, and I trust Mike Edwards as a deep third freewheeling outfielder more than anybody else on that roster right now.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. All right, let's flip to the offensive side of the ball, JJ. And then we'll move on to some prediction sure to go wrong, which I freaking love doing. It is the bread and butter of this podcast. But let's talk about the offensive side of the ball. We came into this game after that Steelers game with some concerns about the overall depth of the offensive line unit, something that the Bills, we have noted, voluntarily sacrificed by getting rid of guys like Ryan Bates and Mitch Morse. I think it looks like it's starting to coalesce. Granted, they were playing against second and third unit guys for the Panthers defense, and the Panthers are a bad roster top to bottom. But we got what we've been asking for, which is Alec Anderson shifting over to second unit guard and Cedric Van Pran Granger getting a second unit start at center. That, to me, is the ideal depth and positioning that you want to see from your second unit. And the second unit offensive line played really well in this game, particularly in the run game. You're the offensive line guy. What did you see from the second unit that gave you hope?
I think that it's nice to see some of those players that we have come to learn about a little bit show out. Ryan Vandermark, Alec Anderson, Richard Garage, who are really like, those are testaments to the thing we mentioned at the beginning of the pod about the Buffalo Bills trying to get guys in here, develop them, and then have those guys deliver a greater value than any of the resources invested in them. Ryan Vandermark, Alec Anderson, Richard Garage, late round picks or undrafted rookie free agents who were spent time on the practice squad developing and being trained under Aaron Cromer are all looking like capable enough on an NFL field to be able to maybe not start at other teams, but definitely be a preferred backup. And there are some teams in the league who would probably start them. So that's an excellent place to be in when you have the Bills starting offensive line is one of the things that actually makes me very happy. I know that you have some apprehension about how much they were willing to part with in terms of depth, but I think it's showing that they knew what they had behind that depth. So it made it a little bit redundant. I don't know that I'd be any happier with Ryan Bates than Alec Anderson at this point. I think that Alec Anderson is going to be a fine player. I think Richard Garage looks good. I think Ryan Vandermark's, particularly at left tackle snaps, is like everything you want. And then there are some players, like, you know, it was good to see Cedric Van Pran Granger with the second unit get some run at center. I think that Tylan Grable should have a roster spot and is a looks like an excellent steal to pick up, you know, as a rookie, because he's got such good athleticism, and it's a matter of if he refines his technique, he'll be starting caliber in the NFL based on his athletic profile. So it's just a matter of learning, getting some of the snaps and getting some time under his belt in the systems to understand how to approach pass rush moves and counters at this level. But if he hits that, the Bills have got a guy who's starting caliber in him based on his physical profile. What I saw was a unit of players who have been mixed and mashed together with other units and other situations, who showed the flexibility and variability of having different players next to them, but were still able to have that preternatural sense of movement and space and where your backup is and how you can help your guard or help your tackle with some leverage and just the small nudge that reroutes a tackle or an end to set your brother next to you up for a block. That was the thing I saw, that, again, the quality of the opponent matters, the difficulty of the team matters because the Panthers are terrible. But the things I saw were very favorable for the year to show it was the small nuances of a team that looks like it has chemistry on the line that we did not see in the first week of the preseason. Saw a little bit more with Pittsburgh and saw quite a bit more with all units in this game. Even times and snaps when they didn't do very well, there were things to take from it that I thought looked like more advanced chemistry, which is what you want to see in offensive line.
Absolutely, dude. I'd love to talk about the running backs, because I think Evans and Gore Jr. absolutely showed out in this game, though both left with injuries. The reality is the running back room on this 53-man feels pretty set at this point. Evans may have some play as a return guy or special teams guy, but I really hope to see one or both of those guys back on the practice squad, particularly Gore Jr. He just seems to, he flows to the opening that the offensive line is providing for him in such a easy, smooth, almost like professional way. Like, he looks really polished, which, given the pedigree and the tutelage you assume he's gotten from his father, the great Frank Gore, the Buffalo Bill great Frank Gore, you're not surprised to see it. But that's somebody who I'd love to see them stash on the practice squad and potentially get some run next season as a depth piece, as that third or even backup running back. I really liked what I saw to him particularly. But I want to talk about QBs, because listen, we all know that if Josh Allen goes down, the season is done anyway. But it's interesting what is happening in the QB room right now with Mitchell Trubisky's injury, which right now we don't know the extent of. And there's guaranteed money in his contract. We had hoped that the Bills were in a position that a lot of teams are when they sign a great QB to a long-term deal. They start to draft rookies and develop them in their system. You hope down the line they become trade bait for a third-round pick or whatever it is. But the Bills went with a high-priced veteran who probably doesn't win you many games, because we know what Mitchell Trubisky is. He struggles in short area, he holds onto the ball too long, and he's a liability throwing it downfield. But he's pretty good in the QB run game. So all that being said, is there a guy not on the roster because they're handling of the QB room that they now know need to go reach for, who's going to get cut? Like a Mike White, who just got cut from Miami today, right? Are the Bills still unsettled in the QB room behind Josh Allen?
I don't like Mitch Trubisky as a player. I think that he was inconsistent, inefficient, and ineffective the last time he was with the Bills 2 years ago. I think he is worse now than he was then, but I think Mitch Trubisky now, when healthy, still better than Kyle Allen, who I think is so remarkably under-skilled when it comes to his like athletic and his tools. His athletic tools, I think, is the problem, right? Like Kyle Allen, he's in the NFL as a backup. He gets contracts. He must be good at play intelligence and kind of understanding systems and where the ball should go and timing and pacing. But the problem is his athletic skills just aren't there. And so I think that saying that, I can still see the Bills signing him if Mitch Trubisky can't go week one and he gets clipped from Pittsburgh. I could also see the Bills signing Case Keenum to come back, because I think Case Keenum, actually, of the Bills' most recent backup quarterbacks, was one who I like the most. He had a decent showing in the preseason when he was with the Bills, And I think that he is a capable distributor of the football because of his pedigree, his long veteran status. And so I think there's an opportunity there. Honestly, for me, because again, as you mentioned, season's cooked if Josh Allen misses any appreciable time. But I wouldn't mind a Ben DiNucci. Give me a Ben DiNucci if Mitch Trubisky, because I think here's why. Ben DiNucci still has movement on his ceiling capable. I think because he's a younger player. I think that when you were talking about Case Keenum, Kyle Allen, Mitch Trubisky, none of them is going to get beyond the ceiling that we've seen in the NFL and the league. Ben DiNucci might. He might still have some seasoning and some flavor, and he might have a little bit longer to go in the slow cooker. Those other guys, they're already cooked.
It's just wild to me how much guaranteed money we have to commit to our QB2 because we failed to draft like a capable rookie QB. Because again, no matter what happens with Josh Allen, season's over. Like if Josh Allen was hurt, the season is over. There is no one you're going to find on the veteran QB market that is going to elevate you to where you need to be to make the playoffs. It's just not going to happen. Joe Flacco's not walking through that door. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So to me, it was a missed opportunity that honestly could have bought them some cap savings, but whatever. So Ben DiNucci, the Buffalo Bread podcast, is on board with you being our QB2. We welcome you as the prince who was promised from James Madison University.
Come on the show, Ben. We'll get you on. We'll let everyone tell the world your story.
That's right. We want to hear all about you. All right, sir. So preseason is wrapped. We now have a couple of weeks to set the table for the Buffalo Bills' upcoming 2024 regular season. And I want to kick that process off with some predictions sure to go wrong. Limited predictions, because we got to stretch this out over two episodes here before we get into the Cardinals pregame. But I want to talk about a couple of areas. And listen, I did some digging and I did some research, and I've got three areas that I want to unpack with you that I think will be a lot of fun to do. One is the overall Bills win total for this upcoming season. Pretty mundane stuff, right? Everyone's going to give a win total prediction at some point over the next couple of weeks, particularly after the 53-man comes out. But I think there's some interesting things showing out on the Bills' schedule with regard to strength of schedule that I think should be factored in before the 53-man gets settled. Next, I want to talk about red zone, dude. The Bills were really good in the red zone last season, and they have added some really fun weapons that Brady and Allen can mess around with. I want to talk about who we think the number one red zone target for the Bills is going to be, and my pick is likely going to surprise a lot of people. And then finally, I want to talk about tempo of this offense. This is a run-first, ball-control-heavy offense. Based on what we saw last season, weeks 11 through 18, when Joe Brady took over. But I think there's going to be some fun wrinkles we're going to see, particularly from a matchup standpoint, with what the Bills are going to be facing on their schedule in 2024. So JJ, let's kick it off with win totals. Let's start there. All right. So the betting over under right now from Vegas is 10.5 for the Buffalo Bills. I've seen some predictions from people I respect at The Ringer and The Athletic go as high as 12. I have also seen some people say this is going to be a season where the Bills are effectively punting and rebuilding the roster. I've seen win totals as low as 7. JJ, where do you sit with the Buffalo Bills' overall win total? They are going to be playing the 9th hardest schedule based on projected win totals this season, and they've got some interesting metrics that they're going to need to be meeting. They're going to need to be facing when it comes to last season's defensive DVOA. They're playing 11 of their 17 games against teams that were either a top 10 in passing defense by DVOA or run defense by DVOA last season. So they've got some interesting matchups down here. Where are you with the Buffalo Bills win total?
I think they're going to be able to go 11-6. To prepare for the pod, I did the classic Bills fan exercise. If you look at the schedule and you like jot down W or L next to them as you go. And I think that the reason I'm pretty confident the Bills will get over 10 wins is that they have a number of younger quarterbacks that they're playing early in the season. And I think that's very good for the Bills, is to play people in new situations, younger. Like getting Marvin Harrison Jr. week one of his NFL career, I think is a benefit because I don't want to play that guy when he like gets his full, when he knocks the rust off and is like fully ready to go, even with the quarterback situation in Arizona and the rest of the offensive in Arizona, I don't want to play that guy later. The Miami Dolphins, their Bills are going to play early, and their defense is in shambles with injuries until midseason. And so there's multiple opportunities. I think the Bills can come out to a hot start and really get things going. And for that reason, I think they can go 11-6. And I think it's going to be a challenge. I think there's going to be some games that the Bills give up that people are just like, oop.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I would not sleep on Arizona week one. Jonathan Gannon, we saw how much of a defensive mind he was. That Arizona defense last season was terrible. And by every metric, they were terrible. But when you look at their film, he was just doing some really weird, funky stuff that I think will not play well with Josh's pre-snap reads. They're running a lot of amoeba stuff that we'll get into when we get into the pregame that I think if you've got 4 months to plan your first game against a squad, I think could really throw a monkey wrench into things. Miami, I'm with you. I think Anthony Weaver is going to be a great DC for them, but they're on their third DC in 3 seasons, and everyone knows what Miami is at this point. They're going to try to run fast. I think Jacksonville has a chance to be a true dumpster fire this season. Gabe Davis came to camp overweight, has not been showing out, does not look like he's a really good fit for what Doug Peterson wants to do, and Peterson may very well be the most overrated coach. Baltimore, Houston, New York Jets then becomes a really tough stretch run. And dude, after that Tennessee game, I wouldn't sleep on Seattle. Mike McDonald, to me, is a great defensive mind. He is going to unlock that pass rush in Seattle, and he's going to disguise where the pressure is coming from in so many unique ways. And that is also something that's been an Achilles heel for Josh pre-snap, is reading where pressure is actually coming from. So there are some trouble spots on here. And because of that, I have the Bills at 10-7. Now, I still think 10-7 wins the division potentially, because again, we just don't know what we're going to get with the Jets. Like, the Jets have the easiest first 8 games of the season, and then it gets markedly harder for them towards the latter half of the season. So as Bills fans, we could be suffering through the Jets are 4-0, Aaron Rodgers, the promise is fulfilled, right? We could be suffering through a lot of that in September and early October. But ultimately, I don't know where the Jets are going to land, because without Hassan Reddick, I don't know where their pass rush is coming from. And that is a team that likes to stubbornly play 4 defensive down linemen like we do and not blitz. So it's going to be really interesting to see the Jets defense and how they make up for that. Then, dude, that stretch run of KC, San Fran, the Rams, Detroit, and then New England, New Jersey, New England to finish out the season. That's a rough stretch run, even with New England apparently punting on this year. 10-7, dude, feels like where it's at for me.
The game that I saw on the schedule as I was doing the little exercise, I was like, ooh, maybe that one's going to be dicey. At LA Rams week 14.
Yeah.
There's going to be playoff seeding on the line, and the Bills have to travel across the country to the West Coast, which is always a challenge for East Coast teams. And it's not to mention it's a 425 game. So the Bills will be playing at 1, their body clocks wise, which is good. But that loss at Puka Nacua, like, I think that team is going to be solid this year.
Stafford's healthy.
Yeah,
If Stafford's healthy,
it's going to be a wagon. And I think that the Bills are going to have a challenge out there.
That's probably going to be another shootout, I would imagine. So, yeah. All right, dude. Next, I want to talk about red zone. So the Bills last season, 2nd in EPA per play in the red zone, and they ranked 5th in total red zone touchdowns, according to PFF. They didn't do it with a lot of traditional running back carries. James Cook was only carry the ball about 1/4 of the time in the red zone, as opposed to 70% of the time in all snaps before they hit the red zone last season. They've got some fun new weapons for Josh to play with too. Keon Coleman, Mac Hollins, I think could be a factor. And then for both fantasy value and real life value, we want to see Dalton Kincaid kind of progress and add to the yak and add to the reception totals with some meaningful touchdown production as well. So he could be a factor there too. But dude, there is a tried and true red zone weapon on this Bills offense that I think is going to show through this season. My prediction, sure to go wrong, is that Dawson Knox is going to lead the Bills in red zone TD receptions this year. Despite all of the new additions, despite all of the growth that we hope to see out of Dalton Kincaid, Dawson Knox has never ranked lower than fifth in red zone targets throughout his career with the Buffalo Bills. And he has had seasons where he has tied or been the leader in red zone receptions for the Buffalo Bills on three of the last four seasons. That is quite something to consider when you factor in the fact that he has not been healthy for all of those seasons either. There is something about Dawson Knox in the red zone that gives Josh Allen a lot of comfort. And I think you're going to see so many squads key in on Coleman, look for Ray Davis out of the backfield, key in on Dalton Kincaid, Matt Collins. They're going to look to shut those guys down. I think this is a season ripe for the return of Dawson's leak. Dawson's leak in the red zone, my friend.
Dawson's leak. Aww. Yes. Pacey. I think that's a really astute point. And it's funny because you were saying that, and my prediction sure to go wrong about red zone success was Keon Coleman is going to lead the team in red zone TDs. But it like stifled my points so hard when you were like, I think teams are going to, and I was like, oh no.
They're telegraphing it. They're scripting. There's just so many preseason red zone stuff for him. Yeah.
And they probably will. I think that the thing that the Bills are probably pretty bullish on, and part of the reason they made that pick of Keon, the first pick in the second round, is that he's shown in preseason in some regards, but also mostly in training camp, that if he does have even a half foot, half yard of separation from a competitor and Josh Allen puts the ball on him, I think that's the piece, Josh Allen putting the ball on him. Mitch Trubisky putting the ball on him isn't going to get the answers. But Josh Allen and him have already developed a pretty significant chemistry in terms of Keon catching literally everything around him, and more impressively, his body control and ability to get his feet in bounds. I think that there's going to be some like just jump ball situations early in the season, and maybe throughout the season they develop into a very strong chemistry. And so I see Keon Coleman as being the red zone target du jour, and I'm excited for it. But when you made that point about Dawson Knox, I was like, oh yeah, no, he'll definitely fly under the radar if they're in 12 personnel close to the goal line threatening with the run. There's Dawson's leak written all over that. So it's going to be interesting. I'm hoping for the sake of the Bills wide receiver room future that it's my guy, but it might be your guy.
I know. It's very reasonable that it's the guy who's been there all along that ends up being benefiting most from all the new additions and new weapons they've added for the red zone offense. Yeah. All right. Last one, JJ. Last prediction sure to go wrong. And we are, again, this is an appetizer for where we're going to be at over the next couple of weeks here. We've got more wild stuff we're going to talk about and a bourbon bet that we also need to decide on what it's going to be. Though I think an early contender is who's going to lead the team in red zone receptions. But I want to talk about tempo. The Buffalo Bills last season, JJ, from weeks 11 to 18, had the second lowest pack rate in the league and the highest traditional running back run rate in the NFL. Wild to think about when you've got Josh Allen under center, but we saw the benefits play out in the long run. They didn't see a whole lot of regression in EPA per play from the switch from Dorsey over to Brady. And we actually saw time of possession go up. The Bills finished second in the league behind only Cleveland in time of possession last year, and turnovers go way, way down as well. So a lot of people are heading into this season, JJ, and they are expecting the Bills to be built around the run. And I think there is a lot of credibility to that idea. And I think rationally it makes a lot of sense. But on a matchup-to-matchup basis, and again, I look at that Seattle game. I also key in on the Houston game as well, the Jets game. Teams that we know are going to want to rotate in defensive line pieces, tempo could be key in really playing a war of attrition against some of these defensive lines that love to rotate 7 or 8 deep and really mitigate some of that. Last season, JJ, the Bills only played tempo no huddle on 11% of their snaps, but Josh Allen's passer rating went from a 93.2 to a 104.9. And we've seen it in real time with the eye test. Josh just looks way more comfortable slinging it in a 2-minute offense. You know what I mean? Not that they're going to run it all the time, But I think situationally, to keep some of these deeper defensive lines off of Josh, I could see up-tempo being a factor and being mixed in to Brady's playbook. So JJ, my prediction, sure to go wrong, the Bills are going to effectively double their tempo rate. They're going to go from 11%, in my opinion, to about 20% of the time next season, again, based purely on a matchup by matchup basis. This isn't going to be the K-gun offense that we've all been calling for to be revitalized with Josh Allen, but I think we're going to see a lot more tempo in certain game matchups. JJ, what do you think about that?
Dan, I will take your 20% and I will raise you, because I think the Buffalo Bills are going to unveil the J-gun offense.
Dude.
And with a 30% up-tempo rate, I think that they're going to go no huddle for portions of games, because I'm going to just go counter anti-NFL media that thinks this is going to be a plodding 3 yards in a cloud of dust rushing offense with occasional play action. No, I think they're going to come out and be slinging it. I think that the level of vanilla-ness to the lack of flavor to the Joe Brady offense in the preseason is going to catch a lot of people by surprise in week one, week two, especially once we get into the AFC East matchups in the first 4 weeks. I think you're going to see some things that the league's not ready for. I'm excited for it.
Wow. I love it. This feels a little bit like wish casting, but I really love where you're at. And we love Josh, right? But like, he is at his absolute worst when he is sucking up the play clock, doing all these checks, trying to figure out where the pressure is coming from, realigning his wide receivers. When he's doing and mired and muck and doing all those things, the offense is performing at its absolute lowest point. When he gets out there, makes a couple of reads, sends some guys to go play, his decision-making is quicker, his turnovers are lower. It is absolutely, not night and day, but you see the difference in real time. And there's a reason why Josh is so good in limited fourth quarter situations where time is running down, the two-minute drill. Like, that's where Josh has made his hay and really made his reputation as a QB. Like, it makes sense putting more of those elements into real game situations. So I love where your head's at. 30 feels really high, but man,
30
I would co-sign.
Yeah, but 30 would set an NFL record over the last 12 seasons.
I know, right?
I understand how obscene that would be.
It would be wild. Chip Kelly listening to this pod. Yeah. What?
That's what I'm saying, is it would be absolutely groundbreakingly and backbreakingly aggressive because of the amount of time of possession. If the Bills go 3 and out with that method, would just be so horrendously skewed towards the opponent's favor.
It would be so bad. I just don't think McDermott would allow it. But yeah, fun stuff. And again, just a taste of those for you, for those of you listening at home, on where we're going to be at next week as we really dig into the 53-man roster and talk about what it means for the Bills season as we're building up to 2024. But until then, thank you for listening as always. Like, share, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. YouTube coming to you soon. Apple and Spotify. And as always, go Bills.
Go Bills.